He was gagged with adhesive tape and bound hand and foot, like the mother. The same intricate process of the cord leading from the hands to the feet and finally tied to an arm of the couch. Somehow he haunts me the most, Kenyon does. I think it's because he was the most recognizable, the one that looked the most like himself. Even though he'd been shot in the face, directly, head on. He was wearing a t-shirt and blue jeans, and he was barefoot, as though he'd dressed in a hurry, just put on the first thing that came to hand. His head was propped by a couple of pillows, like they'd been stuffed under him to make an easier target. Then the sheriff said, "Where's this go to?" Meaning another door there in the basement. Sheriff led the way, but inside you couldn't see your hand until Mr. Ewalt found the light switch. It was a furnace room, and very warm. Around here, people just install a gas furnace and pump the gas smack out of the ground. Doesn't cost them a nickel. That's why all the houses are overheated. Well, I took one look at Mr. Clutter, and it was hard to look again. I knew plain shooting couldn't account for that much blood. And I wasn't wrong. He'd been shot all right, the same as Kenyon, with the gun held right in front of his face. But probably he was dead before he was shot. Or anyway, dying, because his throat had been cut, too. He was wearing striped pajamas. Nothing else. His mouth was taped. The tape had been wound plumb around his head. His ankles were tied together, but not his hands. Or rather, he'd managed, God knows how, maybe in rage or pain, to break the cord binding his hands. He was sprawled in front of the furnace, on a big cardboard box that looked as though it had been laid there specially. A mattress box. Sheriff said, "Look here, Wendell." What he was pointing at was a blood-stained footprint on the mattress box. A half-sole footprint with circles, two holes in the center like a pair of eyes. Then one of us, Mr. Ewalt, I don't recall, pointed out something else. A thing I can't get out of my mind. There was a steam pipe overhead, and knotted to it. Dangling from it was a piece of cord, the kind of cord the killer had used. Obviously, at some point, Mr. Clutter had been tied there, strung up by his hands, and then cut down. But why? To torture him? I don't guess we'll ever know. Ever know who did it, or why, or what went on in that house that night. After a bit, the house began to fill up. Ambulances arrived, and the coroner, and the Methodist minister, a police photographer, state troopers, fellas from the radio and the newspaper. Oh, a bunch. Most of them had been called out of church and acted as though they were still there. Very quiet. Whispery. It was like nobody could believe it. A state trooper asked me did I have any official business there and said if not, then I'd better leave. Outside on the lawn, I saw the undersheriff talking to a man, Alfred Stokeline, the hired man. Seems Stokeline lived not 100 yards from the Clutter house, with nothing between his place and theirs except a barn. But he was saying as to how he hadn't heard a sound, said, "I didn't know a thing about it till 5 minutes ago when one of my kids come running in and told us the sheriff was here. The missus and me, we didn't sleep 2 hours last night, was up and down the whole time on account of we got a sick baby. But the only thing we heard, about 10:30, 10:45, I heard a car drive away, and I made the remark to missus, 'There goes Bob Rupp.'" I started walking home, and on the way, about halfway down the lane, I saw Kenyon's old collie, and that dog was scared. Stood there with its tail between its legs. Didn't bark or move. And seeing the dog, somehow that made me feel again. I'd been too dazed, too numb to feel the full viciousness of it. The suffering, the horror. They were dead. A whole family. Gentle, kindly people. People I knew. Murdered. You had to believe it, because it was really true.